You are listening to Powder Radio. Brought to you by Powder Magazine. Welcome to Sponsored, brought to you by Powder Radio. I am your host, Mike Powell, and this week on the program, we have Elise Sogstedt. She's a third generation Alaskan who lives in Squaw Valley. She's married to Cody Townsend, and she's had quite the career. We are going to talk to her about ski racing, going to college in Reno, all the competitions that she's won, and women in skiing, as Elise has a lot of opinions on gender equality in the ski world. We will talk to her about that and a whole lot more. So sit back and let's hear Elise Sogstedt. Elise.
Hey, what's up?
Nothing. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Gosh, sorry to hear about Goot.
Oh, it's okay. He's in the hospital and they've got things taken care of, I guess. I don't know, but biking can be dangerous, like everything else in the world.
Yes, I'm a total sissy on a bike because of that reason. It's like the off season and I always picture myself getting hurt and not being able to ski once winter comes.
Everyone I know has been hit that commutes on a bike, and most aren't as bad as Goot. You know, he's broken femur, lacerated spleen, punctured lungs. He was trying to go to work, so that sucks.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he was going to sit at a desk for 8 hours, and that's what happened to him.
Ugh.
So desk jobs aren't the best.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's pissing rain in Tahoe.
Oh God, it's really pissing rain. And all the way to the top now, I think, too. But there's a lot of snow, so it's not like the end of the world. It's just crappy to be stuck and watch it rain, but...
And the rains that you guys get are just amazing. I mean, the puddles that I've seen pictures of look like they're like 3 feet deep.
Yeah, it's funny. I own extra tufts for being Alaskan, but really they are just as important here in Tahoe.
And speaking of being Alaskan, you were born and raised there. And to me, everyone I've ever met from Alaska, there's always, I don't want to say a little crazy part to them, but there's something different about the way that they're wired, and it might be living with dark days. But was it a challenge growing up in Alaska now that you've been in Tahoe and experienced what normal times and everything are?
I don't think it was a challenge when I was growing up. I don't think you notice the difference that much. Like you go to school in the dark and then you come home and it would start to get dark pretty quickly. But I notice it now when I go back, now that I'm an adult. And it's funny because even in the summertime, you get really used to it being light out all night and you can sleep through it no problem when you live there. But now that I'll go home and visit my family and my parents don't have blinds in their house, I don't have a problem sleeping through it. And it's funny because now when I go back, I'm like, whoa, it's really bright out. How am I supposed to sleep in this bright light? So,
but as a kid, that was just normal.
It was normal. You grow up with it. And it's funny because I think you realize how much your body becomes in rhythm with nature, where you want to sleep more in the winter. You have a lot of energy in the summer to just go, go, go and take advantage of all the light.
Huh. Now, the crazy part of what I said is that everybody I know in Alaska has a little crazy trait to them. Do you see that in a lot of the Alaskan people that you know? And do you have any crazy part where you can be at the bar till 5 a.m. and then be on the hill at 7 and it's no problem? Because a lot of the Alaskans I know, they are just ready to go at all times.
I've lost that. I think I used to do that when I was in my 20s, be able to go all night and go all day. But now that I'm a little older, I need my sleep and I need to keep things a little more mellow to be able to push it during the day and trying to do really fun activities. And when you're really pushing the pedal to the metal when you're skiing, I need my sleep. I need my health.
And when you say getting older, you just had a huge 40th birthday party, right?
Oh my God, I am so not that old yet.
I know.
But even if I was that old, I mean, if you take care of yourself and you stay in the right mindset, you can do this for quite a while. So it's not bad getting old.
No, and I think age is a state of mind as well. Your body does feel things a little bit more.
Yep.
But as long as you're able to still live like you are a kid, you can do it. It's just your mentality of doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It's good for a human to constantly progress themselves and constantly challenge themselves. And I don't know, you stay more alive and I think you stay sharper.
I would agree with that. And you haven't taken a break your whole life. And I think starting skiing, you started at what, age 3 in Alaska in a backpack?
Yeah, my parents were avid skiers and my dad would just throw me in the backpack and take me skiing. And, you know, I think which is pretty common for a lot of people that I know, like I know Cody's parents would do that with him. And you don't see that very often anymore. I think a lot of people, the parenting style is a little bit different these days.
People are pussies these days.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So when did you actually get out of the backpack and start skiing? And were you put into a race program or are you just skiing around with your family?
I probably started skiing about the age of 3. I'm sure I was in the backpack when I was not able to really walk, more like 1-ish. And I got into ski racing in the Mighty Might program when I was 7 years old. And I took to it right away. I think that at that age, it's pretty easy to be competitive with not only the girls, but the boys and just everyone up to 12 years old. And I did really, really well. And the competitive bug bit me. And I continued from there on. After high school, I did a year of racing called a postgraduate year. And then I decided I was kind of burnt out on ski racing and went to college.
How good were you at ski racing? I mean, if you take a postgraduate year, that means you're probably pretty good and you were focused and maybe trying to make the team. But where were you in your ski racing career?
Yeah, I was trying to get on the U.S. ski team. I was right at that development team level. I was ranked in the top five in the speed events when I was 16, 17 years old. I did pretty well at it. And I think there's a lot of things I learned from it and how to just be an athlete, which has really paid off in my career now. But I just got burnt out on it. And I'm really happy that I got burnt out on it, because if I hadn't and I had started to ski race in college, then I think that probably would have been the end of my pursuing of skiing down the road. Yeah, I was kind of exasperated with it. And then the whole free skiing movement happened. And I had buddies in college who were really into it. I got bit by that bug and moved into the free ski world.
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves. So in high school, did you do anything else other than ski, or was skiing something that dominated your whole life?
No, I grew up figure skating as well, even more intensely. That was like when I was in elementary school up until about 15 years old. You skate for 4 hours a day, 6 days a week and during the school year. And then you'd skate about 7 hours a day, 6 days a week in the summertime.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. I really enjoyed it though. And once I turned 15 and you can start racing fists, and I started traveling more for skiing, I was doing really well in that. So it just naturally took over, because you only have so much time. My parents were big proponents of doing well in school, and I had to be really successful at school if I wanted to do my sports. So you only have so much time in the day.
Yep. And I read that you were a top downhiller. And for me, looking at your skiing now and just how strong of a skier and how you charge everything, it seems like maybe that downhill training has really carried over into everything that you do ski-wise.
Yes. And that all stems from growing up in the mountains of Alaska. Back then, when I was a teenager, on the U.S. ski team were the likes of Tommy Moe, Hillary Lynn, Megan Garrity, and a few more others. And they were all downhillers. So I believe that the mountains there are conducive to skiing fast and big, long runs of just charging. And I think that not only because my idols that I looked up to, like Tommy Moe, were doing that, the mountains just made it that way. Like the downhill there is like a 2 minute long downhill. And you start racing that when you're 14 years old. So you start to just get used to that speed and the fear that can kind of come along with downhill.
Yep.
And I think then that just naturally transitioned into how I free ride.
Yeah. And you can see it. Your turn is phenomenal. And the way that you charge things, it's always so fun to watch, because I won't say it's on the edge because it's really in control, but it's just so fast. So you get over ski racing and you go to college in Reno, and the free skiing world is really starting at that point. And what year are we talking about here?
Okay, so I went to college in 98. I actually started off at University of New Mexico in Albuquerque.
Okay.
They had a really, really good race program. And my intentions were to race when I got to college. I quit when I got there. And I had an academic scholarship that allowed me to do that.
Nice.
And after 2 years of being there, there were multiple reasons why I ended up switching to University of Nevada, Reno. And one of the big reasons was actually because I wasn't skiing at all down at UNM. There just wasn't a ski culture. I didn't ski one day there.
Wow.
The only time I skied is when I took a spring break and came and visited buddies that were going to school at UNR. So when I switched, that is when all of my friends were really getting into the whole freeride scene. This group of guys are some Alaskans and a couple Nevadans. And some of those guys have also made careers in the ski industry. One of the roommates, Casey Hawkinson, is co-founder and owner of Moment Skis. Another one, Annie Miller, he has been a long-time rep for Dina Star and other companies. And I don't know, I think the bug kind of bit us all.
So you're with a crew that's all about skiing when you get to Reno. And are you guys just going up to Squaw as much as possible and maybe scheduling classes so you have 3 day weekends so you can go ski?
Yes, I did schedule my classes so I could get as much free time as possible. But we actually skied at Kirkwood. Back then, Squaw's passes were like $1,800. And I was a broke college student, so there's no way I was affording that. And Kirkwood had great student passes. So we all trekked down to Kirkwood, which was really fun.
And you're doing that every weekend. Your skills are constantly getting better, as anybody's are, who's going on the hill as much as they possibly can. You finish college, and what happens next?
I actually moved back to Alaska. I had a boyfriend that lived up there, a snowboarder, and so I thought, oh, I'm going to go back and take a year off to go ski at home and whatnot. And I did that, and it was a pretty bad winter. So then I decided, okay, well, I'm going to actually go to Australia and live on the beach because I'd never done that before and try and learn how to surf. So I got a work permit and moved there for 4 months. And after I did that, I decided that I needed to not go back and live in Alaska. I need to leave Alaska. I needed to get down to Tahoe and get back into the ski scene. And then possibly also I was planning on going to law school. So I wanted to start studying for my LSAT. But as I started skiing in Tahoe and specifically Squaw, I moved specifically to Squaw because that's the best skiing and the best skiers. And I can afford a pass there now. So that's where I'm going to go. There's so many good pros around, and you start to realize, like, hey, maybe my skiing is at the same level as these guys. You know, maybe I could give this a go. And one thing led to another. And next thing I know, I'm a pro skier and not worried about going to law school anymore.
That is awesome. And how do you become a pro skier? Do sponsors come to you first? I know you're on the Freeride World Tour, and we'll talk about that. But did you have sponsors before you hit the Freeride World Tour?
Yes, I did. I had Salomon as a sponsor before I hit the tour. It was kind of like one of those situations where they were just giving me some gear. Nothing was official. And I thought that to show that I'm a legitimate skier and to give some substance to it all, I decided that I should compete. And by competing, I was able to showcase my talent and be like, look, I actually am legit. So then I was able to sign a contract with them, and other sponsors came on board.
In 2008 on the Freeride World Tour, there's probably never been another person that's done what you did. You won 3 out of 4 tour stops. You were the overall champion. I think you also won the Free Skiing Open as well. So that was a huge year, I would think, in your career. And I would think that's when the money starts coming in. And I'm sure it was millions.
Yes, definitely millions. In terms of being a skier, millions. My life was very rich with my experiences. So that's where the millions were. Competition definitely helps give you validity, and it definitely helped make it so that I could pursue just skiing and not have to work a second job. But as a North American, competing isn't quite as big of a deal. And, you know, North America being in the movies and the magazines is where you kind of make your statement. So in a way, with the competing, like I had mentioned, I just wanted to bring legitimacy to myself. And I also like the idea of getting a title under my belt, because as I knew that if I move through life and you have a title like Free Skiing World Champion, that people that don't even really know skiing can be like, oh, wow, you did something really cool. I have no idea what it is, but that sounds cool.
Right.
Well, that can go somewhere. So it was kind of a little box I wanted to check off and move forward.
Yeah, you know, I think with the Free Skiing World Tour, while it isn't the conduit to getting the big checks, it does validate you, like you said. And I look at the top 3 of the Freeride World Tour almost on a yearly basis graduate into that film and photo world. But what was your experience like on the Freeride World Tour? I've had a lot of conversations with people about it and want to see what your take on that experience was.
I had a wonderful experience. I learned a lot. I learned how to ski better. I learned how to look at lines and perform under pressure. I made some great friends, and it was really, really fun to travel around the world with a bunch of international skiers, especially when I did the tour. The invitee list was a little bit smaller than it is now, so you really got to know one another. Not that they don't now, too, but it's like you got to know everyone, and that was really fun. And Cody actually was on the tour as well for those first couple years. So I got to travel with him quite a bit. And that is our first foray of spending an ungodly amount of time together and doing it in intense pressure situations and realizing that we actually can get along pretty well. So that also was a good thing that happened.
So was the first hookup on the Freeride World Tour?
No, not at all. We actually met in Vegas at SIA.
Okay, just checking. We'll talk about him a little later as well. But in 2009 on the Freeride World Tour, it kind of seemed like you were more about pushing people towards taking bigger lines and really pushing the other women. And I think that's something that has been with you throughout your career. It sounds like when we talked about when you were a kid and you were racing against people that were 12, you mentioned that it didn't matter if they were boys or girls. It was just about winning. And it seems like throughout your career, you've done a lot to push other women women and to get women the respect and the credibility in the ski industry that they deserve. Was that the focus in 2009 when you got line of the year, was just to take those bigger lines?
Yeah, I wanted to push myself to take more risk and step away from competition that year, feeling like, okay, I have progressed myself as a skier. And it felt like I was gaining a little more respect out of the male counterparts too, which is always, I don't know, it's just a personal thing. Like, it's nice when the guys are like, okay, that was legit, cool. And it's not that there aren't other girls that are pushing it or taking bigger lines, but if one does it, then they have to do it as well. But if no one's stepping up, then it's easier to be more conservative.
When you see somebody send it, if you want to have the respect of your peers, you have to send it as well.
Yeah.
Why did you leave the Freeride World Tour?
I really wanted to get into filming and doing more work with photographers and whatnot. That was a big thing for me. And it wasn't easy to do the transition, because if you are competing on the tour, there's a chance that you can make some good money. And when you start filming, you don't have those extra paychecks coming in from getting on the podium. And I think that's one of the reasons why you'll see some people that compete have a hard time transitioning, because it's just the way of life. You know, some people really love it and that's why they stick with it. But I think that sometimes it's hard to transition, because to film, you've got to create your own opportunities, or you have to have it worked out with film companies to get in with them. And it's not easy to get that phone call to say, hey, come film with us, or to have that sponsor that helps really push you towards the film companies to start filming you. Sometimes it's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, when it comes to the film companies choosing you or your sponsors pushing you. But either way, something's got to happen to make it work out.
To get where you are right now, being the squeaky wheel in a lot of places has probably been beneficial. It might have hurt you at some times in your career too, but have you found that pushing and being a squeaky wheel has helped you in your career, or how have you made opportunities happen for yourself?
So being the squeaky wheel definitely hurt with a big sponsor in particular, just trying to be the squeaky wheel of like, hey, let's do more women's stuff. Hey, let's pay attention to women. Check out this market. And I'd write letters to the sponsor and give statistics and all those kind of things of like why the women's market is important to pay attention to. And eventually I just got downgraded in my status and then eventually cut.
And you were downgraded in one of your best years ever, I believe.
Yes, I was. So, I mean, actually, I think a lot of those years I was constantly building off of the year previous. So I don't really feel like any year was anything that was like, okay, this is a legitimate time to cut Elise. It's just some companies have different focuses. And at that time, when I was trying to bring light to the women's aspect of things, they didn't want to hear it.
Everybody needs someone in their sport or a few people in their sport that are going to push for change. And sometimes you might get cut from a sponsor because of that. But as long as you're able to voice your opinion and keep fighting for what you believe in, eventually there will be inequality, but we're not there yet in skiing by any means. And I'm sure you've experienced a lot of issues based on your gender in the ski world. And I wonder if there's anything that you're willing to share with us in treatment that you've experienced that's unfair because you're a woman and arguably better than the men skiers that you're with.
It's funny because all the things that have happened, whether it's been good or bad, has made who I am and where I'm at today. And I'm so satisfied as to where I'm at in skiing, and just my relationship with the sponsors I have now are fantastic. And yeah, the women's market isn't going anywhere. I'd like to say, like, at least back in about 2009, 2010, women were about 31 to 35% of the skiers. And now they're up to 41%. The women's market is growing. And I think with things like the Pretty Faces movie and movements like that, I think that the more visibility there is on women, the more we're going to see women doing really cool things. And it's going to be more inspiring, and more women are going to get involved. Now, I think during that time too, when I was having issues with that sponsor, the Freeride World Tour actually wanted to demote the women to the qualifying series. And we rallied as a group of women. We're like, no, this is going to be a huge detriment to women's skiing. So I wrote this letter and had all the ladies sign it. And we sent it to the tour and we sent it to the Freeride World Tour sponsors. And they ended up deciding not to cut the women off the tour. And I think it's prospering because of it. Sometimes you have to stick your neck out for what you even. And sometimes you can take a little flack for it. But honestly, at the end of the day, I think it's a good thing. Nowadays, I see more women's edits out there. For instance, there's this crew called, God, what are they? They're in Alta. but they put out little edits. And it's just awesome to see. Like, you'd never see that in the past, to know that there's like women that's not just the Michelle Parker, Ingrid Backstrom, and Angel Collinson, who are the token females in the ski movies, that there are actually women out there like doing cool things and trying to push themselves no matter what level they're at. So it's really neat to see.
Yeah. And I will say that the Pretty Faces movie, I've talked about it a bunch on these podcasts, but it's an amazing movie. And if you didn't see A Ponytail, you wouldn't know it was a women's movie. In terms of the skiing, you have no clue. That's the great thing about it. And it was such a fun vibe. Full Moon on the snowboard side did the exact same thing on snowboarding.
Yeah.
And for me, my question as a man who really shouldn't be commenting on this completely is, what's next? As you drop Pretty Faces and snowboarding the next year comes out with Full Moon, I feel like there needs to be some consistency in a series that could feature both ski and snowboard. I think it needs to be more than just a one or two season thing to build the momentum that you've already started.
I agree with that. I do think, though, that it takes more support from sponsors in the industry as a whole. Like the Pretty Faces movie, when you look at it, there were a couple of industry sponsors, but for the most part, that was Kickstarter money and all of us girls paying to do what we did. It was coming out of our own pockets. And it's just taking the industry a little longer to come around. It's a lot of guys, a lot of older men running these companies. It's also based in Europe, and that's a big part of it, to gain that support.
Yeah, I think you guys need a pit bull in business development to go out there and get sponsorships and be totally separate from you, but just secure the money for you guys to be able to make the movies that you want to make.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, we have to take it upon ourselves to go out and get done. If there's something we really want to get done, you just got to go do it. You can't just sit around and be like, oh, well, sponsors aren't giving me money and da, 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 da. I mean, yeah, that is part of it, but you can still make stuff happen. For instance, like the Pretty Faces movie. So yeah, we need to see more of it. I agree. And more women hopefully will do that, but we need more help from the industry as well.
I feel like with a movie like that, the industry is one thing, but I've worked in the industry and I know how shrewd people are with their budgets. But I feel like outside of the industry, there is a magazine culture that speaks to women that are growing up. And I think there's a lot of untapped resources where you could get the money from. But at the same time, everybody who's behind these projects are professional skiers who are also acting as a producer of a movie. And there's really only so much time in the day to be making phone calls to brands that you don't know to get money. So I think it's bringing an outside party in that might not be focused totally on skiing all day, but they are focused on getting money for skiers.
That's a really good point. You know, the fact that that was something Lindsay Dyer was able to pull off, and Liam Pelosi for the Full Moon, the amount of time that it takes to do that other side of business is insane, especially if you want a good production.
Yeah. And then that frees you up to do what you guys do best, which is skiing and putting together an amazing storyline. Moving forward in your career, in 2012, you're part of the Tunnel Creek accident. Jim Jack, Chris Rudolph, John Brennan all are gone now. And I'm not going to talk about the whole experience because there's tons of coverage out there, but you were in a huge avalanche. You lost people that were close to you. And at the end of the day, it changes your preparation and your knowledge of safety. I think it maybe was the precursor to SafeAs. I'm not really sure about that. You can tell us. But how is your avalanche preparation and the knowledge that you're getting changed from that day in 2012 until now?
Yeah, things changed quite a bit. I had to do a lot of self-reflection in that incident because, gosh, I mean, when something like that happens, if you don't learn from it, then one, you're just going to find yourself in the same scenario. And two, you have to be pretty hard-headed to not realize that you were a part of something where there's a lot of mistakes made. And in doing so, my preparation, I've become so much more methodical about it. I'll be totally honest. I wasn't someone that checked the avalanche report every day. Now I do that. It's small things like that. I get in the habit of making sure that you have like your checklist of what you're doing, what you're looking at, making sure you have different ideas of when you're going to go out or when you're going to go ski. And if you have a big goal, but maybe you need to have a backup plan, you have to go out in the backcountry knowing that you are going to possibly say no. And I think it's one of the biggest things that I've actually learned and have exercised is saying no. And sometimes it's hard to say no because you don't ever know if that was ultimately the right answer because you don't put yourself in that situation to see if things actually go right or wrong. But I guess at the end of the day, I've developed a motto since the avalanche. For me, skiing is all about skiing another day. So if that means that I have to be mellow and not ski anything when you step out into the backcountry, you know, you go out on your snowmobiles and you start looking around, everything looks really good, but you know that it's not good to go, and you just hang out and eat lunch and kind of scope lines, well, then that's what you do. Just as long, because you know what? The mountains aren't going anywhere.
Right.
And another day, the conditions will line up better and put you in a place where you set yourself up for success.
Yep. I think that and something we learned all when we were kids, it's better to be safe than be sorry. And unfortunately, you learn lessons and then that teaches you to be safe in the long run. And I think there was a lot of lessons to be learned for the whole ski industry in that accident. And you can see it today. And one of the things that's a big part of what you're doing is SafeAs. And it seems like a place where women can get together. I would think guys could go as well, but it's predominantly women that are having an avalanche class with you, Michelle Parker, and a few others that you can mention.
We're all doing yoga one day, Sherry McConkie, Michelle Parker, myself, Jackie Peso. And we started talking in general, how girls talk, having coffee after yoga. And we thought that there was a niche that could be filled of offering women's avalanche classes and at an introductory level, because women being a huge part of our ski community are generally more cautious. And women aren't going to step out into the backcountry feeling like, okay, I have a little bit of education under my belt. I kind of know what I'm doing. I know how to use my gear. So now I feel comfortable getting out there and start learning things. Whereas guys are a little more apt to like, oh, I'll just go and learn it. And
yeah, we're stupid.
Well, it's not stupid. Sometimes maybe a little, but it's just a different process.
Yep.
And because of that, by creating an introductory level course, we're getting women's feet wet. And also a lot of people use our course as a refresher. And then I forgot to mention that we ended up bringing on board Ingrid Backstrom and Lael Tone, who's our lead instructor. And she's like our mentor. We all have big girl crushes on Lael Tone. She has so much knowledge and she's just a badass. But we've also then brought in snowboarders since. We've brought in Robin Van Gin and Hannah Beeman actually joined us this year. And then, yes, we did expand to having one day with guys, and Cody Townsend came on board with that.
I thought when I was working in the ski industry for a brand, one thing I always realized was that you walk into a ski shop or anything ski related you walk into and it's intimidating right away. It's like the bros who know everything about the skis and you're going to listen to them. And I feel like when a woman walks into a ski shop, it's even more intimidating. And we were always trying to think of ways to create women's nights. It seemed like a way, if you had the right women in the building, to have a non-intimidating place for women to come and find out about skis. But I would think even with everything in skiing, it's intimidating for a lot of women to come in there. And by offering the classes that you do, it eliminates that barrier and makes it easy to want to learn and want to get out there.
Exactly. I think that we also think that maybe we can get women enticed to come take a SafeAs course just by the women that are leading it. Our age category is anything from 14 and over. And we think that young girls or older girls that maybe have a big crush on Ingrid are apt to come take our class just because they want to come hang out with Ingrid. And then they come to the class and they're like, whoa, this is really important. I need to learn this information. And at the end of the day, our whole goal is to make these women aware of the fact that they need to continue their education and take their Avi 1 and so forth. So I think that by making an environment where women are stoked to learn and ask questions and get involved and not feel silly that they don't know how to use their transceiver, which there's so many guys that are exactly like that. It's just guys puff up their chest more.
For sure.
In general than women do. And that's kind of why we also thought we'd expand to men as well, with the idea that, come on guys, this class is something that applies to you too. And or it also, a lot of women's backcountry partners are men. So if a woman's coming to take this class, you want to take a class like this with the person that you go out skiing with the most or snowboarding. And you know, a lot of times that's men. So another reason why we opened the door for men on one of the clinics this year.
Nice. I am not going to take up any more of your time, but for those that have been listening to this interview, there's something that you should know about Elise that we didn't talk about. She was 2014, one of the 50 best women in action sports. She produced her own video for a TGR contest that placed in the top 5, and it is phenomenal. I highly recommend going to TGR. She also produced a movie with Cody called Conquering the Useless, where he got sick in the backcountry, and Dave Treadway decided he wasn't going to ski gnarly lines anymore, but really an awesome movie all around. And then you can find her with the SafeAs Clinics wherever they are, and you can find them online. Where can we find them, Elise?
SafeAsClinics.com.
All right. Pretty easy website. Elise, I thank you so much for making some time for me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
So great conversation with Elise. She is not afraid to tell it how it is. She sugarcoats nothing, and that is always refreshing in any part of the world. We will have more Elise on Inappropriate Questions. I'm excited to say that next week on the Powell Movement, we have Sherry McConkey, and she's going to tell her whole story. It's something that hasn't been heard, and that's on thepowellmovement.com. As always, if you have any show feedback for me, you can reach me at mike@thepowellmovement.com or on Twitter at Powell Movement 1. Thanks, everyone, and have a great week.